These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Have you heard from him at all of why he's not here? And then do you have any indication of when you'll see him?
I have not. It's voluntary when guys are here. You know, we've had outstanding participation. We almost 95%. You know, there's a couple guys. One guy's missing today because his daughter is graduating. But for the most part, we've had outstanding participation. And, you know, so we'll just see when the minicamp shows up.
That was Vikings coach Mike Zimmer talking about Danielle Hunter, who has been absent at the OTAs. Welcome into Mackie and Judd. You might notice somebody missing. That would be Phil Mackie. He will join us later in the show. Some duties called him away. But that's okay because his substitute is our good friend and the always full of information scoop master, Channel 5 Eyewitness News and also Score North, Darren Doogie Wolfson. Dukes, what's going on, man?
Good morning, Judd. The player that Mike Zimmer was referring to there that is home for his daughter's graduation would be Patrick Peterson.
I was going to ask if this was
home
like a
in
kindergarten.
Arizona. Yeah, it's
a kindergarten graduation.
Yeah, I don't know if it's preschool,
this,
kindergarten.
He's old enough, though, to have a kid who's a little bit like, I mean, because if this was like a 5-year-old, get back to camp.
Well, and it might even be an elementary school. I don't know how old his daughter is.
Yeah.
But I'm told he's back in Arizona attending to some family business.
Okay.
Nothing
good
of the emergency ilk. He'll be back next week.
Look at you. Look at you providing a scoop already, a pre-scoop of the scoops, because I want to ask you about this. Now, Danielle Hunter is forfeiting, I believe, approximately $100,000 in workout bonuses by not going to the OTAs. But as we point out every time this year, around this year, OTAs are optional, so you do not have to go. So, like, if you don't go, you can't be actively fined. In 2 weeks, I believe it is a week from this past Tuesday, the Vikings will host their 3-day mandatory, and that's the key word, minicamp at TCO Performance Center. Danielle Hunter wants a new contract. We've talked about that. You've given us the scoop on that for months now. Danielle Hunter is staying away from the participation activities that are not mandatory. We've known that. What do you think is going to take place in 2 weeks? Because I will set you up by saying this. If Danielle Hunter shows up, it's a clear sign that he's not happy, but he thinks there's been progress made and we're getting closer to something that's going to satisfy him. If he does not show up, it will be the first truly tangible thing that we have indicating that if he does not have a new contract for training camp, he might hold out. What is your expectation?
So that mandatory mini camp is June 15th to 17th. If he doesn't show up, the fine money would be approximately $95,000, give or take $1,000 or two. So, I mean, that's a pretty significant amount of money. I don't care how much money you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
I am on record on this podcast, on this show, going back weeks, that Danielle Hunter is not a me type guy, doesn't enjoy the spotlight, likely isn't one that wants to pay the fine money. But is he the one driving this bus? Or is it more his representation? So how much progress, is there tangible progress made in the next 12 days or so, where there is an indication that the Vikings ultimately are going to give him a raise, where it would make logical sense for him to show up? Or do talks go nowhere over the next 10 to 12 days, thus Danielle ends up skipping mandatory minicamp? I don't know how I would handicap it at this point, Judd. I'm telling you, I'm led to believe he is not one that wants to pay the fine money. But if his agent is in his ear enough, long-standing relationship with his agent Zeke convinces him enough, hey, we're not making progress, you need to make a stand, you cannot be an Egan in mid-June, I guess I wouldn't be overly shocked. So I know I'm waffling there a little bit.
Right.
I think a
right.
lot of it depends on what takes place. Undoubtedly, there are going to be talks. It's not like Rob Brzezinski is doing nothing right now.
I was going to say, and
sure,
there
he's working
talks,
on a Brian
right?
O'Neill extension.
Yeah.
He's working on a Harrison Smith extension.
Sure.
They signed officially as of this morning a free agent cornerback, Ty Smith.
Mm-hmm.
They're still engaging on some other free agents, you know, the Geno Atkins of the world. So they're actively seeking other avenues to improve their team. But they know what they need to do internally. So undoubtedly, there are going to be talks. Rob Brzezinski, Danielle Hunter's agent. How do those talks progress? Do they progress in the next 10 to 12 days? But I guess right now, I would not be overly shocked if on June 15th, Danielle Hunter is not on the field.
Do you buy that he and Zim are not in communication?
I think there's been some communication. Now, has it been a phone conversation, text messages? I'm led to believe that Danielle Hunter has communicated with more than Andre Patterson at TCO Performance
Center. Would make sense if you want to.
Yeah. And it's not like he's communicating with just the assistant defensive line coach. And certainly teammates, right? I mean, the defensive line has Michael Pierce is talking.
But I mean, the Vikings have known for quite a while what he wants.
And all that. Yeah,
this is not new breaking information to them.
I mean, I'm more curious because I still believe, Judd, they are going to give him a raise. Mm-hmm. I'm more curious to see what the happy medium is because I'm telling you, that Joey Bosa contract, but that's an outlier.
Right.
Like, kudos to Bosa, his representation for getting the Chargers to bite on that money. And he's a good player. But, like, I think if you took a poll of most front offices, they would tell you they would prefer. Now, we need to see Danielle coming off a very major surgery.
Yes.
But I think most front offices, I'm trying to be objective here, not wear my Minnesota sports hat here, right? I think most front offices would say, give me Danielle, right? Am I wrong on that? Like, I think most front offices would say, give me Danielle Hunter over Joey Bosa.
If both are 100% healthy and you know it, I think you're right. Not positive, but I think so. He's an athletic freak. I mean, Hunter is
and so is Bosa, and so is his brother. Like, maybe his brother, if we included him in this equation, maybe Nick would be the one that front offices would take just based on him being the youngest of the three. Although Danielle is still not, like, Danielle is still in the prime of his career. Remember how young he was when he was selected?
Yep.
What is Danielle now? 26? 27? Maybe Declan can go to the Google real quick.
26 will be 27 in October.
Thank you, Dex.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's still very much in the prime of his career. I think they do. I do, Jed. I think they eventually take care of him. But to what extent? They are not giving him that Joey Bosa money.
Well, and would it be with the promise of what they did for Dalvin, which was, I believe, a day before the season opened against the Packers last year? Now, Dalvin showed up for training camp, and they obviously didn't play preseason games, and they essentially, in the first part of training camp, also didn't really use him so that he wouldn't get hurt. But I wonder, I mean, that to me is why 2 weeks from this past Tuesday is so important, because that's going to indicate where things stand. If he doesn't show up, that means he doesn't think that there's been, or his camp, to your point, which is probably more accurate, doesn't think that there's been progress. So here's what intrigues me about this entire thing. Because one, you're right. He's coming off neck surgery, herniated disc. It scares you. No question about it. It scares you in any sport. And it scares the pants off you in football. But that being said, this defense is largely remade. Like, there's a lot of different... This defense was terrible. And they're getting guys back, and they clearly signed guys. And there's no question there was a priority from the head coach and the GM to remake this defense. Patrick Peterson... just a lot of changes. But if Danielle Hunter holds out, if they don't do this, and he says, okay, that's fine, I ain't showing up, I ain't playing, I'm not. And the one thing about his contract that's intriguing to me is there's only a year left of guaranteed money. So, like, if he gets hurt and they're like, okay, sorry, dude, he's in trouble. So if he tells them, you don't pay me, I don't show up. All of what Zim has done to remake this defense, which is still okay, becomes just okay, not great. Because now you don't have a right end that you're sure of, and you don't have a left end. So you tell me, where's the pressure from the quarterback going to come? So I do think that in some ways, despite the neck problem, Danielle Hunter has this team over a barrel. If he says, you don't pay me, I don't show, all of what you've done for the past few months, if it doesn't go out the window, it certainly suffers a setback.
You add on top of that the pressure. Now, there's pressure every year, but year 8 for Mike Zimmer, Rick Spielman, there are all sorts of expectations within the Wilf family that this will be a playoff team once again, that they are much closer to the 2019 team, not the 2020 team. So you think about the high expectations internally, maybe higher than a lot of other years, right? You need Daniil. You think about in March, what they tried to do in free agency, Trey Hendrickson, Carl Lawson trying to add a really good pass rusher. They swung and missed. They eventually add an interior defensive lineman in Dalvin Tomlinson. They draft a couple pass rushers, but the question marks are there. The Pitt kid, the Florida State kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I don't know if we can expect big things immediately. We think DJ Wonnum maybe can take a step, but are you really relying on DJ Wonnum for 50-something snaps a year to really generate legitimate pressure, you know, on 8 to 10 snaps a game? I mean, that's a lot to ask. So you're right. I mean, more so than any other player on defense, Judd.
Yes.
Like, Daniil Hunter is the MVP of that defense.
Yes.
With all due respect to Harrison Smith, who's an excellent player, who needs to be one day in the Vikings Ring of Honor, or whatever they call it now.
Yeah.
The Vikings Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Great, great player. Heck, maybe we can make a case that he belongs in Canton one day. That's how good Harrison Smith is. But right now, the way the roster is configured.
Oh, absolutely.
Daniil Hunter is the most important player. And Eric Kendricks, fantastic player. How he wasn't on that NFL top 100 list is beyond me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Daniil Hunter. Nobody is more important than Daniil Hunter.
He is the, in my opinion, it might be the team, but certainly defensively, he is the linchpin.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that if he...
And that's why they take care of him eventually.
Yes. And
this regime takes care of guys... When yeah. he's as important as
they've taken
any
care of a lot
them,
of guys, no
they
question
are
about
going
it.
To take care of him.
And the ability that you could use him to play left end at this rate, right end in the Saints playoff game, the interior, like if you turned him into a defensive line Swiss Army knife, I think he'd cause absolute havoc. Now that is provided that he's healthy. But you also can't assume he's not going to be.
That's why you want him in here, though.
Yeah, no, I know.
Mandatory minicamp, whatever. But when the pads come on 3 days into training camp, July 30th, July 31st, August 1st.
Yep.
When the pads come on, right? Like, regardless of what you're hearing from the people down at Exos in Arizona, where he's been training. How he's in phenomenal shape. He's always in phenomenal
shape.
And
that's not the point. Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Football shape is a bit different.
Yes.
Hitting is a bit different.
And that's
what
you
need to see. Want him here as soon as possible when the pads come on.
Yes. The Wild. Who is who's back? Who's gone? And handicap the Parisi situation for me now, because I realize a trade and or buyout is financially punitive and could be really, really bad. But I keep saying this because I've seen stories, Dukes, saying, well, they'll talk to Zach and hopefully he can come back and play a third or fourth line role. And I keep saying this. Bill Guerin worked so hard going into this season to rebuild the chemistry of this team that as much as it would hurt financially, possibly on a cap that might be flat for 5 years, nice job, National Hockey League, having an unhappy Parisi who at some point in time is going to say, I'm playing pretty well, I'm not a top six guy, is something this organization doesn't need to. So how would you handicap Parisi's future here and who's going to be back and who's going to be gone with this team?
Well, on Parisi, I'll continue to say, I've been saying it for a while, he would welcome a change of scenery. This started a while ago. This isn't anything real new. You know, him being a healthy scratch at the end of the regular season, him being a healthy scratch the first three games of the Vegas series, there's been tension there for a while. There's been a sense from those who know Zach that Billy has been trying to get rid of him for a while. So, yeah you're
they
right.
They traded the Islanders.
Yeah. Well, and Zach would have loved that.
Yeah, I know. Go back to JP's team.
You're right about the cap. It looks like it's going to be flat for 5 years. You would at least get some immediate cap relief. I mean, it would go up pretty high thereafter, right? Like, aren't the cap hits seven-ish, you know, million dollars?
Yeah.
Pretty quick, Declan. Yeah. So, but you would have that roster opening, right? You may need a forward opening, right? So you'd have that. You'd have a little bit of immediate cap relief. So I just wonder if eventually it gets to that point where it's going to be really hard to trade him, even if his agency works really hard trying to find him a new home. I don't know if there's a logical trade match. Like, what sort of money would the Wild need to take back?
Right, and they would have to eat some of that. That's the
And they
issue.
Would have to eat some of it, where I just wonder if the end game, we have a ways to go to get to this point, but if the end game is eventually the buyout does happen and he gets what he wants. Now, are teams angling to sign an aging Zach Parise? I mean, what sort of contract would he get on the open market? Maybe Lamoriello with the Islanders would bite on a one-year minimum type deal or tryout contract, but like, what sort of deal would he get? But long way to get to that point, but I can just tell you, he absolutely would welcome a change of scenery.
And it looked like he was told by the GM and coach when he went in to talk to them for the last time, I think it was Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, because I know some guys met with Billy
and Dean,
it would have
right?
been on Tuesday.
Well, his quote,
and Dean too.
Yeah. Zach's quotes very much reflected a guy who's been told, just sit tight, we'll do something. Like, you don't say...
Yeah, but he's also savvy enough.
Right.
Where he knows.
But he's going to play.
He's very careful with his public words.
Right. But he's going to play the game as he sees fit. Zach plays by Zach's rules, which is fine. He's done that for a long time.
And he's earned that right in some ways.
Right. But I just think his quotes were very much the quotes of a guy who was told, we'll work on a divorce of some sort. Because he's like, I'm not going to get into what we said. And you're right. He's very savvy and he's a smart dude. But I can't believe he's back. And if he is back, it's going to be, I'm telling you, in January or so, he'll be playing decent and he'll go in and say, well, I should be top six. Expansion draft.
Well, let me stop you there.
Yeah.
I can promise you that he feels this way, that
yeah.
if he had been in the lineup games 1-3,
nonsense.
that series absolutely could have been turned out differently if he had been put on the power play.
And this is the problem, though. So what you're saying is why you got to sever ties, because he was good because he was fresh, because he always tries hard. He's just old.
He is like sure.
Like, this is no indictment
of him as a
player.
200-foot game, right?
Yes.
The speed isn't there,
and the speed of the game is incredible now.
Yeah, I understand.
Yes.
I get all that. Now the comeback to that is the playoffs. That's a different game.
Yes.
Than regular season game number 47. Or 22, right? That it boggles down a bit more. His skill set could have been utilized.
Yeah.
Even if the regular season game has passed him by in some ways, he could have been utilized, certainly on the power play to some extent. And if you had used him in games 1-3, maybe end up winning game 2 or game 3.
Yeah, the problem is in game 4, so he scored 3 points. He scored, I think, what, Dex, 2 goals and
yeah.
an assist. The problem is, go back and watch game 4. I believe it was the first Golden Knights goal of that game here. It's Parise who is standing in cement in the neutral zone as, I believe it was, Waugh of the Golden Knights flies by him. That's the problem. So it's not that he can't contribute scoring. It's that when the game is actually going back and forth, he can't execute his assignments all the time. And again, it's not, I just want to make this very clear. This is not a bash on him as a player. He's trying, but you're 36 and he has played his ass off for how long now? That catches up. So expansion draft.
Plus with the injuries, like there's an injury history,
absolutely.
A recent injury history,
problem.
Like his body is really
yes.
beat up.
Yes. Expansion draft, Parise and Suter would help him a lot if they would waive their no move clauses. I don't think the Kraken would take either of those players.
I don't think so either.
But it's probably a pride thing as well. And if they don't waive those clauses, they have to be protected. What's your guess on guys like it would be what? Zach and Ryan and Zuccarello and then the three defensemen who you would not expose?
I don't think, well, specifically the first three you mentioned. Yeah, I mean, I don't see a scenario where Zuccarello, Suter, or Parise would be selected. And I think Bill has to at some point, just to save face, because at some point he'll be asked the question, hey, did you go to those guys to ask them to waive their no movement clause? Like, he has to ask them at some point. I can tell you this much. It did not come up in the exit meetings earlier this week.
Okay.
I'm just telling you, I don't think if it gets to that point where Billy asks them to waive their no movement clauses, I don't think they're going to say yes. I just don't. Right? I mean, we just laid out the tensions.
Parisi probably won't.
And Bill going back. Yeah, well.
He'll be.
And Ryan and Zach are close, right? Close enough.
Well, I think Ryan would be afraid he might get claimed. He won't, but I think he might be afraid he might get claimed. I've always heard that he has no interest in departing.
That is accurate.
Like, he wants to be in town.
Yeah.
We're like, Zach's like, screw it, I'll go play elsewhere.
I mean, don't forget, it was Craig Leopold when Ryan got hurt in Dallas a couple years ago. It was Craig who drove him to the...
Green Bay?
To the third, yeah. I mean, for hours, they were in the car together. Like, that just tells you how close the owner and Ryan Suter are, that I do think there's an eventual path to Ryan working in some capacity. Maybe it's a Mike Madonna-type role, but that Ryan works for the Wilds for many, many years post-playing career, that, yeah, he is not interested in uprooting the family and moving somewhere else, that he plans on finishing his career here in Minnesota.
Hey, you, in our prep notes, sent me a note about the Wolves in the playoffs. What's that note? So the Wolves are actually sending their guys to playoff games?
Well, some. Okay, so Jaden McDaniels is back home right now in Seattle.
All right.
Good for him.
He's not leaving Seattle to go to Denver or Phoenix to just sit in the stands
future
to watch
home
a
the
playoff
Wolves.
Game.
He's home.
Yeah.
So the Seattle Sonics, too.
That's one example. Anthony Edwards is under the Clutch Sports umbrella.
Okay.
Rich Paul and company. And so, you know, Rich has LeBron and Anthony Davis, pretty much the entire Lakers roster. Anthony, just through his agency, is going to end up, who knows, maybe he'll be there tonight for Lakers-Suns game 6. And if it's not a Lakers game, it'll be some other game.
Yeah.
Right? So Anthony will eventually, but just on his agency's dime, the Wolves don't need to facilitate, you know, that.
Right.
Right? So, yeah. So Chris Haynes of Yahoo had the note, I think it was game 3 of the Lakers-Suns series. Is that the first game in L.A. of that series? Yeah, it must have been.
Mm-hmm.
That the Wolves sent Jalen Noel and D'Angelo Russell. Like, D'Angelo Russell's been in the playoffs.
Wait, and he went?
Well, to me, he's genius from this standpoint.
That'd be a no for me,
dog. Well, no. He's smart from this standpoint. Devin Booker is his guy, right? He wanted to go see Devin play for Phoenix. If you get the Wolves to foot the bill for that expensive ticket,
you know,
again, I don't care how much money you have. Genius to me if you're D'Angelo Russell.
You know what?
Genius.
With the Wolves' luck, Booker probably told D'Lo, get my guy Cat here. I need Cat here. And the next thing we know, Cat's going to demand a trade to the Suns.
But there's no negative. But what's the positive?
Well,
like, seriously, D'Angelo
D'Lo,
Russell
though.
Needs to sit in the stands?
Yeah.
To watch a Lakers-Suns game when Staples Center is maybe half full?
I don't get that.
I don't really understand.
I sort of get the young players who, like, maybe haven't been to the playoffs
even
ever,
Jalen
but
Noel,
I wouldn't be doing
really,
that.
Is Jalen Noel benefiting that much from sitting
you
in the
what?
Stands?
If you're going to send anyone, send the poor people who have had season tickets to this woebegone franchise since day one. Send them to a playoff game and say, this is what it's like.
That would
all
be,
expenses paid to your seats to these poor people that plop down their hard-earned cash to watch years of dreck at Target Center.
I'll tell you what, though, like watching the other night the Denver-Portland game. Remember, it wasn't that long ago that Denver and the Wolves were playing that play-in game.
I was there, dude. It was great.
Yeah, really. You think about Denver's
success
since then. I think
the 8-10 now is based on that game.
Yeah, well.
Because that was so much fun.
That was. That was absolutely a ton of fun, and you could have comparable scenarios, maybe not exactly the last game of the regular season, winner to the playoffs, loser out, but, you know, we can debate the merits of the play-in tournament, but I'll just tell you this much. I mean, the play-in tournament isn't going anywhere. It'll be back next year,
I
mean, that should be a logical goal for the Wolves. I mean, if you can't be top 6 in the West, find a way to be the 7, 8, 9, or 10, right? Like, take the path San Antonio or Memphis took. Like, that, like, you need to make that step next year. But I'll just tell you, like, watching Denver-Portland, the show that Damian Lillard put on the other night, any number of other playoff games, man, am I yearning for that to return here. Like, just...
Know how long it's been? Dukes, how old were you the last time, not the playoff appearance a couple years back with Tibbs, but the last time that they, when they made that actual playoff run?
I was in my partying prime, right? I mean, I was still finger painting, but... certainly not maturity prime, but partying prime. I was 24.
Yeah, and
you know, and I was working at the Fan.
Seven.
I mean, I was there at every game covering for the Fan back then. So, I mean, I was at every, you know, Never forget Game 7 against Sacramento, the playoff series against
the Lakers. I went to one of those
games.
It was great. The atmosphere was so fun.
I was talking to Troy Hudson the other day. We went down memory lane. Like, Troy was really good that series. Remember, Sam Cassell went down with the injury. Gary Trent Sr. to this day, doesn't mean he's right, but to this day, he believes, 17 years later, he believes that if Sam Cassell doesn't get hurt, that they would have won the championship. That they would have won that Western Conference Final Series against the Lakers, then gone on to beat the Pistons.
Well,
in
the Pistons
finals.
They could have beat. The Lakers, I'm not
that
so Pistons sure about.
Seems pretty good, though. But I mean, you Gary them, firmly though. Believes if they had stayed healthy, there were some other injuries, too. I mean, Hudson came back, but he was hurt for a stretch. That he believes if they had maintained full health, that they would have won the championship. And then imagine the trajectory of the franchise.
I was going to say, then things are a little different.
You know, how different are things if
they
had hoisted
the
O'Brien trophy then?
If they win the championship, then Flip doesn't get fired a few years after for the bad start. Because if you've got a championship, you don't blow Flip out, which they shouldn't have done in the first place.
And, I mean, does KG get to the point of not necessarily demanding a trade, but...
Oh, I got a question.
You know, making it known to some level, hey, maybe it's time for me to move on.
Yeah.
And obviously it worked out well for KG, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's cemented his overall top, we can debate this, but top 40-ish player of all time, top 35, top 30 player of all time once you win that championship, the one he won in Boston.
Celtics sweeping changes. Stevens kicks himself upstairs. Danny Ainge retires. They're going to attempt to get a new coach, but obviously changes in the infrastructure in Boston. Do you think KG is going to get himself a role there? Because it seems like the Wolves might be an option once the change has taken place, but that's going to be a transition. Do you think that KG potentially ends up with some type of job with the Celtics?
I'll tell you this much. Chauncey Billups' name is going to come up for the head coaching job. Remember Chauncey interviewed before Gerson Rosas got the Pobo job here, the president of operations. Chauncey came in for an interview.
Pobo's a great
term. I love the term Pobo.
Yeah. I'm with Declan.
That's the legendary story where
I'm the Pobo.
Calvin Booth and Chauncey Billups had been using the same people to help prep them for that interview. Like, you go through interview training when you interview
it's like a
job of that magnitude.
Yeah.
And so their bullet points were like exactly the same, like verbatim.
Oh my God.
Like, it was a red flag that how did Chauncey and Calvin.
Yeah.
And Calvin, by the way, should be somebody's president of operations. Calvin Booth is.
Say Pobo.
Is a genius. Pobo.
I like Pobo.
He absolutely should be a Pobo. I love Calvin. And Chauncey is a great basketball mind. And, and I think whether it's Boston now or a year or two from now, you know, whatever Chauncey wants to do, head coach or
but if he
desires
job,
to be in the front office. Well, so what I'm saying is if Chauncey gets that job, and I'm not making any guarantees, they're going to go through a process. Doesn't mean Chauncey's getting that job, but if he gets that job in Boston, that's one of KG's guys, right? So does that then put the wheels in motion? As far as I know, KG and Brad Stevens, the new president of operations, there's no relationship there. But Mike Zarin, assistant general manager, number two in command, a guy, by the way, that Tom Thibodeau wanted to bring here instead of Scott Layden. So Mike Zarin, Boston's number two,
interesting,
was Tibbs's guy. So Zarin was there when Tibbs was an assistant coach under Doc Rivers. So Tibbs and Zarin got real close, but Zarin is a Boston native. He wasn't leaving the Celtics. And so, you know, Tibbs had to go to choice two or choice three, brought in Scott Layden as his general manager. But KG and Zarin have some sort of relationship. So, yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. I don't have any deep insight as to, like, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But sure. I mean, just based on connecting some dots, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily rule that out. I think KG does want to be involved with some franchise. Choice number one would be here. I do think at some point A-Rod and Lori do approach him, but like to what capacity extent, like Charlie Walters had the note in his Sunday column.
Yeah, that was interesting.
But KG having all this influence on front office decisions, that would surprise me. I don't necessarily foresee that happening.
Final scoops, sir. What else is in the scoop notebook?
Well, I had a lengthy chat, about 30 minutes worth, with John Anderson, the longtime Gophers baseball coach. 40 years.
Yeah.
A Minnesota baseball icon. And at this point, so I don't know if this is out there or not, mini scoop, whatever. He's got a multi-year contract offer on the table. So if John Anderson today wants to sign that contract, he can secure his term. He can be back for year 41 and presumably at least year 42 as Gophers baseball coach.
Okay.
The issue is, he told me, is the language in the contract. So he will not sign that current contract that's on the table. So the ball is now back in Mark Coyle's court, Gophers athletic director. Will he change the language that John desires? So still an interesting situation. Now, in the same breath, I should tell you that John is hopeful he'll be back. He's operating right now as if he'll be back. He actually has a pretty good recruiting class coming in. He's got a kid from the state of Colorado, Alec Willis. He's been throwing at 96-97 this prep season. Stanford wanted him. Like, this is a good get for the Gopher baseball program. John's fear is that the way this kid is throwing right now, that some major league team is going to draft him, and he'll sign.
Yep.
That if he's offered seven figures, if he goes in the top three rounds, gets offered seven figures in terms of a signing bonus, that John could lose this recruit. Like, when do you hear about the Gopher baseball team losing a recruit to the Major League Baseball draft? So John, unsolicited, brought up that possibility. I did bring the kid up specifically because I'd heard good things, but he's the one who then took it down the path of, you know, we could lose him to the Major League Baseball draft. But what I'm getting at is John is operating, and the way he was talking about this 2021 recruiting class, I mean, this year was a disaster. COVID shutdown, last place in the Big Ten.
Yeah, they were awful.
A lot of injuries. And, I mean, they had a bunch of seniors, redshirt seniors. Not like it was a young roster, but they stunk. But he's operating as if he'll be back. But he brought up another issue. Like, he told me, it's like he's a GM. He even brought this up, Judd. This was fascinating to me. That he feels like he hasn't had these conversations yet, but he knows of other coaches that have. That you call another coach. Let's say John Anderson calls the coach at Michigan. Maybe not within the conference. Calls the coach at Kansas. Says, hey, I've got this shortstop on my roster, but I've got a shortstop above him. Good player. He would help you. What if you end up with him, and then is there a pitcher on your side? Like, almost like a trade.
Weird.
John Anderson brought that up verbatim. That he can see scenarios where programs end up trading guys. But with the portal, it's free agency.
Yeah,
like, it's
that's really
it's professional sports.
Yes, it is.
It really is. And John said, you know, like, you can call him Gophers baseball coach, but he goes, I'm like a general manager. Wow. I'm trying to assemble the roster. It's not as much the coaching. It's
right.
It's all that stuff. You know, and there's still some scholarship limitations. There's ways that some other schools, based on grad transfers, bringing some guys in, like Michigan specifically, where they have bigger rosters. They're able to have more guys on the roster. John can't have that. So there's some frustration there that there are roster limitations that he deals with at Minnesota, that some colleagues in the Big Ten, some of the really good programs, Nebraska, Michigan, some others that they don't have to deal with. But all that being said, John wants to keep going at 66 years old. So he's hopeful. But I'm just saying, it's a situation. I've said this for a few weeks. I'll continue to say it. It's a situation worth monitoring, whether John Anderson indeed will be back for a 41st year as Gophers baseball coach.
Great stuff, sir. Thanks, Dukes.
And then on the Twins.
Well, the Twins are the Twins.
Yep.
We'll get to
them. I mean,
they're
prepared.
We'll get
to
them on Tuesday.
They have their scouts out.
Yeah.
It's a very logical thinking front office.
Tease this for Tuesday's scoop.
Yeah, it's a very logical thinking front office. They're not delusional. They are going to start selling. If good offers come in even sooner than July 10th or July 15th, I think they're going to strike. That they realize, especially with all the injuries continue to mount up, even though Maeda making good progress, Buxton making good progress, I think maybe next week. Mm-hmm. For Buxton's return to the lineup. So some guys are making legit progress. They know what they're dealing with. That it's just, it's too many teams to climb over at this point. That they would need to play the rest of the season at a 95 win pace.
Yeah, that's not happening.
It's just not happening. When I say 95 win pace, just to get back to being in like real contention mode, it's just not realistic. Mm-hmm. So I'm just telling you, they are prepared to strike when the offers start to come in, especially on their pending free agents.
Awesome stuff, man.
Okay.
Thanks,
see you, boys.
Dukes.
The Meadows at Mystic Lake has modified its golf policies to follow the COVID-19 public health recommendations and welcomes you to play this award-winning public golf course. It offers a unique, challenging, and scenic golf experience. The Meadows at Mystic Lake is a full-service golfing destination, enhanced by nearby food and entertainment, including the Meadows Bar and Grill and Mystic Lake Casino Hotel. It's never too early to book a tee time or shop the pro shop. Stop in or visit golfthemeadows.com. That's golfthemeadows.com. Owned and operated by Shakopee Mid-Wakanton Sioux Community.
But lately, it's really for much of the year this year, it's been a health report every day and talking through who can do what and piecing it together and finding a way. So yeah, there is a lot of that. That's just as important, if not the one of the more important parts of what we do. And normally we don't have to do it to this extent. Normally it doesn't take most of the day and most of everybody's energy.
Oh, hi guys.
Oh, hey.
I'm back.
Thanks, Phil. Hey, it's Phil Mackey from Score
hey,
North.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
It's Phil Mackey here. Hey.
Let's talk about...
We sure missed ya.
Doogie, I didn't miss you guys.
Doogie,
I didn't miss you guys at all, but I missed Federated. Federated Insurance is here to help us unpack what's happening with the Minnesota Twins right now. Federated provides insurance, not for your injured roster and not for your underperforming, quote-unquote, star players in their prime, but they can help your business with risk management tools, protection, peace of mind. Find the full list of industries Federated protects at federatedinsurance.com. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours. All right, Judd. Rocco Baldelli lamenting the long list of injuries the Twins have right now. I saw a couple different beat writers. This is definitely a theme right now. The Twins are trying to push this a little bit to say, I know this has been a bad season, but look at all the injuries. What percentage of the pie chart of blame would you give injuries for the Twins?
So I'm not going to dismiss it because they definitely have had a lot of guys out and it's been a problem. And when Buxton is out, unfortunately, it's not surprising, but it definitely impedes you. That being said, one of my starting points of the problem with this team is in the bullpen, where last time I checked, until Thielbar left the game last night, and it's Caleb Thielbar who left with a groin injury. They've, Colome, healthy, just stinks. Robles.
Shoemaker's been healthy.
Robles.
Hap's been healthy.
High wire act. And, he can strike guys out, but he also can cause you heart palpitations. So if I was to do a pie chart of blame, I would say just off the top of my head that I would give, 10% or so. But I think that there's so much blame to go around from the bottom on up to the very top chair for how this team was constructed and the swings and misses that we're clearly seeing, that I would be hard pressed to pass along the Twins PR spin, which I'm sure is, you can't lose this guy, the old Sid line. You can't lose Buxton and you can't lose Kepler and you can't lose, you've got other problems too. So I would seriously say about 10% because I think to go there is a poor excuse from which you're not learning what you should from what has been so far a disaster 2021.
Yeah, I mean, teams suffer injuries. It's certainly a factor. Obviously, it's a factor. Byron Buxton being out is a huge loss because he was the best player in baseball when he went down. So if they were just fully healthy, let me see, what's their record? 22-33. I mean, I'm just spitballing this, but they wouldn't be above 500 if they were fully healthy. Look at the guys who've been, and by the way, there's no such thing as a baseball player. Well, there are some, but you're not just fully healthy all the time, right? You're going to, we heard about this Michael Pineda, some forearm soreness. Well, guys, he's a pitcher. You're going to throw 200 innings in a year. Arms get sore. There's a difference. Pitchers will tell you there's a difference between being hurt or uncomfortable and being injured, mm-hmm. right? And so mm-hmm. some of the stuff is guy fouled the ball off his foot and now he's a sore foot or has a mild strain of some kind. Baseball teams for 100+ years have been riddled with players up and down the lineup that are just playing through things, right? Joe Mauer played through things his entire career.
He was soft.
Knees,
he was so
right?
soft.
He was hitting,
so soft.
He was hitting softball bombs yesterday, pulling the ball.
He
come on, Joe. You could have done this for us.
So I want to separate injuries
yeah.
from from guys who've been a little bit nicked up, maybe, right? And let's kind of go through it, right? Jorge Polanco has been healthy enough. He's underperforming. Josh Donaldson, yeah, like it sounded pretty bad initially. Guy popped his hamstring the second pitch of the season or whatever it was, right? But he's played 43 games, 177 plate appearances, underperforming. Max Kepler's been a little bit injured, Buxton, so I'll definitely give you some of those. Miguel Sano missed a little time, but for the most part, he's fine. He's played 40 games. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's terrible. He's been terrible, right? So on the pitching side, you nailed it. I mean, really, it's a Colome, disaster, healthy. Shoemaker, Hap, healthy, disaster. Maeda, I don't know, man. Did they, you know, do you get a little soreness after you start the season after nine starts with a 5 ERA, or did the soreness lead to a 5 ERA? We don't really know. So I would say I'd say 20%. I'll give it more than you. Okay. I'll say 20% injuries. But let's not use injuries as the, well, see, look. No, there's a lot of other things happening here that are causing the Twins to be 11 games below 500. So I'm not just going to fall for the look how hurt they are now excuse.
Which is a great one. Man games missed, right? That's the old term that they used in hockey for years. Man games. We've missed. Look at all the man games. I would equate the Twins to this. If the Twins were a car, were a car that you took into the shop and you're like, this car isn't, something's wrong. It's not running right. It's not. And they lifted up the hood of the Twins car. I think the first thing, among the first things they would identify is the bullpen gear. The bullpen gear is a mess here. And the reality is the bullpen is a gross misjudgment by people that make the decisions on who is in that bullpen far more than, well, yeah, but Kepler is hurt too. And yes, that's a problem. But we've talked on this show, Phil, going back to the old show, we've talked how many times, and I think I would trace it back to when Kansas City got good for a brief time period there, to the importance of arms in the bullpen, that this is you don't put, well, this guy's okay. He used to start. Now he's going to be in my bullpen. The Royals sort of paved the way, I think, for showing you essentially need three arms of guys that can bring it. I mean, throw absolute gas and are good. And this club falls short completely. Like, Taylor Rogers is rebounded a little bit, but he's still not great. Colome is how he has not been DFA'd is beyond me. Robles will look good against one batter and then terrible against two. So the misjudgment of this bullpen and the hubris that the Twins have, and it is hubris of, hey, this guy struggled with the Angels, but we see something that they didn't, right? Yeah. It hasn't worked. It simply has not worked. And your bullpen right now is an old school 1990s, hey, let's slap this guy out there. And it has gone woefully wrong.
Yeah. So the other thing too, I don't know, sometimes we've talked about this before on the show where we, on our show and at Score North, I think there's a perception that we're negative or that we're just being antagonistic, right? I mean, I honest to God's truth, I don't know if we've just gone that soft in this market. You and I have opinions, Declan has opinions, and sometimes we want these teams to win championships. And so I'm not gonna sit here after an 0-18 playoff run in which they're now underperforming again and coddle them. They don't deserve to be coddled. They don't deserve to have excuses thrown on them, even if there are some justifiable like injury concerns. Yes. Does that mean that they would have been a 40-win team right now, just steamrolling through the American League if they were fully healthy? No, like there's a bunch of dudes underperforming, and I will admit, my annoyance with the Twins when they're down, you know, 5 runs again to the Orioles last night is 100 times more heightened because they are 0-18 since 2004 in the playoffs. So just like when I fire off tweets, when I'm, you know, when my blood pressure is boiling on this show, all of it is because, in large part, they haven't won a playoff game in 18 tries, which is a North American sports futility record, okay? And so whenever I see people, media fans, trying to, well, but, you know, you throw 2020 out because it was a COVID year, or look at the injuries over here, or you're being too hard on Miguel Sano. No, you guys aren't being hard enough on a franchise that hasn't won a playoff game in 18 tries in a coin flip sport. And so, you know, you and I were getting some pushback last night, and I saw Declan jumped into one of the Twitter phrases too. That
I had to.
Why are you guys? You guys are being overly critical of Miguel Sano, who, by the way, is hitting 157.
Yeah,
with a 652 OPS in his prime right now, and he was garbage last year too. And he makes $10 million, and he was supposed to be one of the center points of this franchise, and he's having an atrocious season, except for one good game and like a three home run game and a 10-day hot stretch, right? We're being too hard on Sano, and B, there are a bunch of other problems that we need to devote more attention to. So A, are we being too hard on Miguel Sano? And B, who are three non-Miguel Sano players that deserve the criticism to be spread around more, Judd?
Donaldson, Kepler, Polanco. Can I continue? Shoemaker, Hap.
I don't criticize Shoemaker. It's the scout that signed you theory with Shoemaker.
It is, but then he does his Zoom post-game call and says it's just bad luck. I mean,
got Dubnyk disease.
Sorry, Sandy Koufax. Didn't mean to imply that you had a horse bleep game. Like the going through the list is easy. Are we too hard on Sano? All right, I'm going to try and give again. I don't want to be condescending, Judd, but I'm going to come off that way. But I'm going to try and give a tutorial on the perfect parallel of why we are not too hard on Sano and why the weird defense of him from some in this town is actually now bizarre. All right,
take the glasses off.
Okay,
take the glasses off.
Okay, yeah. Kid, sports day. I'm talking to you. But I'm serious. Like, if you defend Miguel, I'm going to tell you exactly why, and I would like you to process this fully. So don't lash back. Don't get mad. Take a deep breath and listen. The perfect parallel to draw here is Byron Buxton, okay? Byron Buxton, unfortunately for all of us as baseball fans, can't stay healthy. He can't. I don't know why. I don't know if it's something about how his body is constructed by the good Lord or a higher power. I don't know why, but he can't. But you know what we don't do? And you know what they would do in some towns? Rip him up and down. He would get ripped for not staying healthy. He would. He would. If this were Boston, they would be saying, why can't he do that? Byron Buxton, you suck. They would. And we don't do that.
Buxton, you drink wine coolers.
Why don't you have another Bottles and James?
Byron Buxton, I like to call him.
So.
Boston.
That's a good one. So the point being is we don't rip him because he's a magnificent talent who's turned himself into a really good player and has worked extremely hard and appears to be beset by really bad luck. Sometimes he gets ripped. But we're a logical show. We're a show that parcels out blame where it belongs. And if you are unfortunate enough that you get hurt a lot, yeah, we'll talk about you. But Buxton and Mauer now have become similar in the fact that Joe got hurt a lot. Now, it was weird with him because he got ripped by the public. Still don't know why. But anyway, Miguel Sano is a self-made bust. That's why we're mad. He is contributing every day. And the more that people out there put out the analytics trying to show, oh, you don't understand the underlying statistics, say Miguel Sano is Joe DiMaggio, Babe Ruth, and Jimmy Fox, okay? What you're doing is you're enabling him to be a bust. And Miguel Sano can't adjust. Miguel Sano has to go to Nelson Cruz's house, which means he does care. But he has to go to Nelson Cruz's garage before a game to get a tutorial on what he's doing wrong. And eventually, because this is the big leagues, team adjusts to what he did, and then he's lost again. So, no, we are not too hard on Sano. And I don't understand the people out there defending him and constantly pounding the drum about how great he is are enabling the failure. Why would you do that? Why are you doing that? What is your point? You are, and basically what you're saying is Miguel Sano is more important than the team. And if you're a Twins fan, that really confuses me. So again, from Sports Dad to you, the difference is Miguel Sano every day is going about being a bust through, unfortunately, a lot of things he's doing wrong.
And he deserves to be criticized for that. Just like he deserves to be, at times, I think, praised for the fact that he is not nearly as lousy a first baseman as I thought he was going to be. But the reality right now is Miguel Sano is a better defensive player than an offensive player. And that is a frightening thing to say.
I got a few social media messages like this yesterday because I've tweeted out a lot about Miguel Sano's bad numbers this year and since 2018. And somebody went back and said, he went and searched and said, Mackie tweets about Max Kepler in 2021, two. Mackie tweets about Miguel Sano in 2021, 26. Is there something else that might be different about Miguel Sano, insinuating... Is Mackie and are people ripping Miguel Sano more because he's non-white? That's what he means with this tweet.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, that's absurd, for one. But two, on Kepler, of course he deserves criticism. Of course he does. But the criticism of Miguel Sano isn't just for his bad performance in the first 3 weeks of this year. It's essentially a prime of his career achievement award. Since the beginning of 2018... Max Kepler has racked up 9 wins above replacement. Miguel Sano, 3. 3 wins above a replacement-level player since the beginning of 2018. And that includes an amazing 2019 four-month run in which he was helping to carry the Twins' offense, which nobody disputes, by the way. He goes through stretches, and that was the longest stretch of his career, by the way, where he can carry this offense. But for the most part, he was the number 4 prospect in the world 5 years ago, according to MLB.com. So part of this is expectations. Kepler was expected to be a really good player. And I think he cracked like the top 40 one time, like Baseball America. Like he was like the 30th or 40th best prospect in Baseball America. But he wasn't talked about from age 18. And by talked about, I don't mean fans and media as much. I mean scouting services, Baseball America, MLB.com's pipeline, the Jonathan Mayles, like the smart people that are evaluating these players on a regular basis, that Miguel Sano can be a generational talent for the Twins and for Major League Baseball. Whether that was fair or not, obviously we can debate that. But some of the criticism, if not most of it, is run through that prism, right? Well, why don't you criticize Jake Cave? He's garbage. Because he's a fourth outfielder. He was never supposed to be a centerpiece of the franchise, right? Why don't you criticize Polanco? Well, okay, yeah. I mean, he deserves criticism too. But Polanco was never touted as centerpiece of the franchise by the team, by scouting services, etc. And so when there's that big of a gap between reality and expectations, and you make $10-plus million, listen, when Sano signed the contract, Doogie reminded me of this on Twitter this morning. When he signed the contract, he talked about wanting to play here the rest of his career and what he did in 2019, he wants to carry that over and have it be the norm. He was excited to have turned a new corner in his career, and here we sit. And so why was Joe Mauer open season for basically 10 years, half of which he was a batting champion, right, who just didn't hit enough home runs? And why is Miguel Sano off limits, right? And does that mean that we also shouldn't be criticizing other players? Sure, but I'm not going to tee off on Matt Shoemaker, who is just a throwaway bottom of the rotation starter.
I'll take
what about
one.
Josh Donaldson? Well, Josh Donaldson, you must be a racist. You're criticizing Miguel Sano and not Josh Donaldson. Okay, Donaldson definitely with injuries and performance has not lived up to that contract 100%. But again, Josh Donaldson, when he was in his prime, was an American League most valuable player. He maxed out the peak of his career as one of the best players in baseball for like 4 or 5 years. The Twins signed him, and it was risky when he was old. And so, like, yeah, does Josh Donaldson probably deserve more criticism on this show? Yes. I will say yes. He definitely does. But he's still, like, Josh Donaldson still is producing a 117 OPS plus, which is above average for this season. Well, it's above average for any season when you have a 117 OPS plus. But, like, his OPS plus is above average. Miguel Sano's is well below average. So, yeah, Donaldson's struggling. But he maxed out the peak of his career. He's adjusting now that he went through a slump. And he's still pretty darn good defensively at a pretty premium position, third base. He deserves some criticism, but he hasn't been the disaster that Miguel Sano has been. So I don't know. End of my rant here. But it just kind of, it frustrates me that we settle for excuses and good, not great for a team that has been now 17 years without a postseason game victory, not a series victory, a win in a postseason game. It drives me nuts.
And I feel, and this is the worst part about my Sano feeling now. I feel empathy for him. Him at the plate is hard to watch. It is such a colossal disaster for the most part. And yes, I know if he hits a ball, it can go a long way potentially. But when you see him flailing now and slamming his helmet down in the frustration, that's not fun. I feel bad for him. But my take is not to rip him now. My take is say he's damn near unplayable. Like there are certain guys. Look, Donaldson to me, yes, the contract looks bad now, and he's underachieving, in my opinion, by a lot. But that being said, he's not unplayable. Miguel Sano is unplayable. Alex Colome should be DFA'd. He should not be. And the problem with Miguel is I don't know what you do now. Like, do you spot him in there? Do you platoon him? Because his splits are sort of weird. It's not like he's got one clear, defined, you know, he can hit southpaws or something. So I don't know what you do. But the fact is, if anybody, Sano fan or not, doesn't think that the Twins, one, aren't concerned, and two, trying to find a way to solve this, you're absolutely crazy. Now, externally, they're not going to talk about that, and I get that. But internally, this has to be a major discussion point now, because you can't, if you're going to come back in, if we have baseball in 2022, if you're going to come back and try and be successful, which, by the way, this team should at least be competitive, I would hope, next season, you can't throw him out there at first base on a daily basis, given the last 2 years. And I'm not going to excuse 2020. It was still a 60-game sample size. And then into the playoffs, that was largely a bust. So I'm sorry, I can't just be like, well, 2020 does not count. Yes, it does. And if you put 2020 on 2021, it becomes even more concerning. But I actually, and this is the worst place to be in my opinion, when it comes to an athlete, I actually feel bad for him. Like I'm past the point of, oh, he sucks, he's not good. I now almost cover my eyes during his at-bats, because it's so tough to watch a guy who is that lost. I feel compassion for him, and that's about as condescending as you can possibly be towards a guy who plays a sport.
The four players, so you and I have been doing a show for 7 years, and I did 4 years daily show with Patrick Royce and Mackey, so it's 11 years just blabbing daily about Minnesota sports. And the four players that I have criticized the most and have gotten the most blowback from fans while criticizing them, like, you're being unfair, or you're wrong, or you got to give a guy a chance, he's still young, or whatever it is, right? Kirk Cousins is on that list for sure. I mean, the jury's still out on that. Jury's still out. We'll see. He's in his prime. He's got an upgraded offensive line. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Wiggins, Delmon Young, way back in the day, like 10 years ago, and Miguel Sano. Like, people, like, you're wrong, you're being too hard, and it's like, I don't know, watch the games. Not to mention, Andrew Wiggins was a max player, okay? He was a max player.
Yes.
He's going to be able to feed generations of kids and grandkids. He's going to be fine in life.
Yep.
He can take a couple of bloviating idiots on microphones wondering and poking at him and asking, what's the deal, dude? You gonna play better?
Mm-hmm.
Delmon Young was a number one overall pick. The Twins traded their best pitching prospect, who also was kind of a bust, in Matt Garza for him. And he put together the one season that he was a shining example in 2010. And it's like, where are you? Can we get it again? Right? Can we do, you know, instead of going to the bars every night, like, can we hone in on our craft a little bit here? And then with Sano, I think he's put in a lot more work the last couple of years, but obviously the output has not shown up on the field. So I don't know.
So what's the cause, though, of fans to eventually put player before team? This is what confuses me. Like, if you're a Twins fan,
You want the Twins to win.
And why are you defending? But why are you defending one guy?
It's like, super weird.
It doesn't make sense. You're a Twins fan. Like your business card would say Twins fan, not Sano Daily.
It's the same thing with the Wild and Zach Parise this playoff season. Oh, wasn't it so great seeing Zach score a goal? There's like six things I want to see before Zach Parise tips a slap shot on the power play coming back from being scratched for 3 weeks. I want to see this team win. I want to see this team. I want to see Kaprizov show up. I want to see Fiala show up. I want to see if Cam Talbot's legit. I don't give a bleep that Zach Parise is scoring a power play goal and he's coming back from a scratch. I care about the team's success, not what Zach's doing in a feel-good story. That is, come on, get out of here with that BS.
Well, unless Zach is deemed to be able to help the team, right? Like,
yeah,
but you're saying
yeah.
The team that you care about the team over a player, and sometimes we get it backwards here.
It's weird.
Yeah.
But, like, so, is it trying to justify that the player's going to be okay because he's going to save the team? Like, I'm trying to go through what the thought process is. Like, I feel like Vikings fans defend Cousins because the Vikings signed him to a huge contract and said that he could win a Super Bowl, and fans are like, well, you'll see, he will. And it's like, I don't think so, folks. But I'm trying to work this backwards as far as why there is a faction, and it's a faction, it's not the whole thing, it's not even close, but why there is a faction of each fan base that falls in love with certain players and then begins to defend that player way more than the team would. Like, do you, if you had a drink with Falvey right now, do you think he'd be like, you guys are too hard on Miguel? He'd say, hell no.
I don't know.
He'd say, hell no. I think privately he'd say, no, he's a major disappointment. We'd like to trade him.
Yeah, but sometimes I think you know how it works. I mean, you covered the Vikings beat for a long time. I covered the Twins beat. What happens is, especially when you're a beat writer, for instance, you're plugged in. Ideally, you'd be plugged in, right? So your job is to be plugged in as a beat writer. And oftentimes you'll get information off the record from front office people or other people with the team where you sort of get the green light on behalf of the team to criticize players in a certain way, right? If the team feels like...
They might even give you information.
Right. If the team feels like... I'm trying to think of an example from the Twin, like when I covered the Twins beat, like when there was frustration. I can't think of a specific player, I guess. But, hey, this guy has just not been... you know, putting in the work, or, you know, this guy is kind of a pain in the ass behind the scenes. And so he's not getting enough criticism compared to this guy. Just thought you should know. Here's an anecdote from behind the scenes. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of feels to me like with Miguel in particular, yeah, there's like definitely fans on Twitter and, you know, small sample size that are pointing out, dude, where's this guy been for two? Like, I know that 2020 was weird, but like, where have you been, dude? This team needs you. Like, you're supposed to be a centerpiece and you make $10 million. Where are you? And I almost feel like there's a protective shell around him. Like, it's almost like the team, like, is there something that the team is trying to protect with him? Or, like, why wouldn't the team at some point be like, what the hell is going on with Miguel? He's underperforming. He's not living up to the extension we gave him. Open season. Criticize, right? It almost feels the opposite with the Twins, where they're trying to make excuses for him or whatever, and I don't understand what that.
But privately, they have to be beyond miffed, right? Frustrated. I mean, you've had him lose weight, then he gains weight, then he gets hot, then he doesn't get hot. The fact that he had to go to Cruz for a private tutorial to me also is a red flag of sorts. Like, why is that not the?
I actually like that.
No,
like that.
But I'm saying, as far as the machinations behind the scenes, like, why is that not? They're a coach with the Twins. I mean, why does that have to be Cruz? Like, what's going on here? Like, I think there is definitely more going on behind the scenes than we know. And I would be curious to know more. But do you know what all of this crystallizes, boys? This crystallizes to me one very clear thing. We used to think that the Twins' mistake or just flat-out dumb bleeping move with Ortiz was terrible because Ortiz turned himself into a Hall of Fame player and a World Series champion in Boston. The curse of Ortiz is not that. The curse of Ortiz is our inability to give up on people that we should give up on because we invoke his name constantly.
Yeah.
That has left far more of a resounding to me feeling around this town. Look, Ortiz left. It was a bad, terrible, one of the worst mistakes in baseball history, including Babe Ruth. But
when you think about now, it's 2021. That move was 2003. Is that right, Phil? When you think,
yes.
Okay, when you think about 18 years later, the worst part is not the fact that he went to the Red Sox and had great success. The worst part is to this day, anybody who shows potential, we always say, what if he's Ortiz. The next Ortiz? Instead of saying the rational thing, which is, I don't think this is going to, well, or at the end, I don't think it's going to work. Right. Too bad.
Yeah, and, you know, Ortiz is such a special example, too, because he was pretty darn good with the Twins. He just had some health. He had a wrist injury or something at one point, and then they were so cash-strapped, even compared to now, right? It was before Target Field, and so they just let him walk. Babe Ruth garnered a $100,000 or so, whatever it was. I think it was a six-figure payment from the Yankees in the early 1920s. Ortiz, who is the modern-day Babe Ruth, basically, right? Playoff hero, home run champion,
yeah, in some way, yeah.
Hall of Famer,
yeah.
The Twins got nothing for him. So, yeah, it's your point on that is 100% correct in that we do have a fear of, well, what if he leaves us? Well, I just don't think we're talking about the same type of dude, Ortiz and Sano.
Constant trepidation,
different type of personalities.
Constant. Mm-hmm. Trepidation and fear. Oh my God, he might be. If he leaves, he's going to turn into a Hall of Fame player. You know what? In the case of Sano, I can guarantee you he won't.
Yep. So, by the way, talking Twins all season, it's been mostly depressing because they keep losing games. But presented by our friends at Dennis Kirk. Dennis Kirk, it's riding season. If you ride a Harley, it doesn't matter what you ride, Metro Cruiser, Indian, Sport Bike, you'll find what you need at DennisKirk.com. 160,000 parts and accessories in stock. Clothing and helmets as well. If you just want to ride and get as far away from this underachieving Twins team as possible, well, Dennis Kirk will hook you up with all kinds of parts, accessories. Order by 8 p.m. They ship the same day, and shipping is free for orders over $89. When the open road calls, head to DennisKirk.com. All right, boys, every single Thursday, Declan digs through a decade plus of Twitter archives. Mm-hmm. Old tweets exposed here. What do you got this week, Declan?
Oh, we got a good collection. Actually, we have a couple Zolgad tweets that correlate with one another. So Zud, I have to expose you twice. I also ended up, I have a Facebook status today that was tweeted out, or posted, I should say, 9 years ago that I saw at the last minute that I will also be bringing to the table.
Nice.
But we'll start with Judd, a overall NHL observation. From Mr. Judd Zolgad on April 30th, 2016. Observation from my barstool at Bunnies. The Maple Leafs will be the NHL's version of the Cubs in 2 years. A good teardown. Now, that teardown happened to a degree, and they built it back up. Yep. They've had insanely good teams, and they're basically have become the Minnesota Twins of the NHL. They haven't won a playoff series since 2003. They choke away leads.
They're sort of the Vikings.
They're just Minnesota sports of Canada.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yep.
That's fair.
No, you got me.
Yeah.
It's amazing. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good leader in the clubhouse there.
I was going to say, I got bad news for myself.
And I am sorry. Then you doubled down a year later on April 23rd, 2017. The Maple Leafs haven't won a cup since 67, but won't be a surprise if that drought ends soon.
Now I really have a good lead.
Reminds me of what the Cubs have done.
It did.
Doubling
it
down
did at the time.
The same
it did at the time, but I didn't remember. And clearly, I was too drunk at Bunnies in 2016 by 2017 to recall. Okay, I lead. I lead for sure.
Same take.
Like, I'm not going to. I own this.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, here we have beat writer Phil here from September 18th, 2010. Wow. Jason Repko has a laser.
So he literally had one?
Okay.
Like a lightsaber?
So let me explain.
R2-D2?
Okay, this is 2010. This is September 18th of 2010. So Twins were on the verge of clinching a division. They're coming up on 90 wins. Oh. Repko was a fourth fill-in outfielder. The vibes were good and positive with the 2010 Twins. So this is just me feeling those good positive
dancing.
Vibes.
Yep. Dance, Phil, dance. Man.
Wow. I mean, he did have a pretty good arm. Nobody disputed his defensive abilities, so I still think Judd's the leader in the clubhouse here, but that's
I'll
just
invoking
the name Jason Repko.
Right, exactly. Jason Repko and laser being in the same tweet.
Get ready for the laser show. All right, this is this kind of coincides with Phil. On June 3rd, 2012, I put a Facebook status that just said Scott period Diamond period. So okay, you must have shoved that day.
That's a mic drop, Scott.
This is a close race now.
He must have shoved that day. I don't know what he did on June 3rd, 2012, but he must have did 8 innings of, 10-hit, one-run baseball,
dude,
I'm sure.
I remember, honestly, because I covered that beat too, there was a day game in the summertime in which I think he threw a complete game, maybe shutout. Let me look it up real quick.
Okay? June 3rd, 2012. So he must have did something good, and he was, 2012 was the year of Scott Diamond. That was what I think he won Pitcher of the Year at the Diamond Awards and was pretty dang good.
The periods.
Yes. The periods!
That really makes
down.
That really makes the status.
Doubling down.
Okay. I was close. He did, by the way. Okay, the start I was thinking about was on July 27th. He did throw a 9-inning complete game shutout in an 11-0 win over Cleveland, 98 pitches. But the start that you're referring to happened on June 3rd. It was against Cleveland, and it was 7 innings, 0 earned runs, 3 runs, but 7 innings, no earned runs, no walks, a couple of strikeouts. And the Twins won that game 6-3, and Diamond lowered his ERA on the season to 1.86.
So it's probably
Diamond.
Scott
Diamond. Diamond. Baby Scott Diamond.
I gotta say, I honestly, this is such a close race. I think the periods at the end of Scott and Diamond might give Declan the victory here.
It's so it's basically exclamation points. Yeah. Like it is Scott Diamond.
It's like an established pitcher, and you're just like, yeah.
I understand if I win, but yeah, that is awesome. That was a great race.
There it is.
That's like a pennant race
old
right there.
Tweets exposed here.
Good job, Dex.
Mackie and Judd, also presented by our friends at PXG. So I gotta imagine our friend Scott Diamond probably has a lot of extra time to golf these days. His last major league appearance came about 5 or 6 years ago, somewhere in there. So we'd recommend those PXG Gen 4 clubs, which are the best performing clubs PXG has ever made. You can stop by PXG Minneapolis and Southdale Center, check them out. Check out the spring and summer apparel that has arrived in store and find out more at pxg.com/Minneapolis. So tomorrow on the show, we're going to do a couple fun things. Under Siege, Action Movie Rewind, a Steven Seagal classic, a Mount Rushmore of Steven Seagal movie. And the two wrestling nerds in the house here, Declan and I, are going to talk to Natalya, WWE superstar and maybe even future Hall of Famer, Natalya, on the show. So a lot of fun stuff tomorrow. And that's a wrap on this therapeutic episode of Mackie and Judd. Don't forget, we have daily Vikings conversations on Purple Daily, and we have a brand new Score North app with all kinds of new features on it, which we'll talk more about. But if you don't already have the Score North app,
it's nice.
Check it out. Download it. It's
I like
free.
It a lot.
Pretty.
It's even Judd approved.
Yeah.
Just go check it out.
Old man approved.
Yep. See you guys.
Hey, kids. How's the water?
It's full of weeds.
I can't move my legs.
Your arms are free, right?
Yeah.
Wave them around. It's fun.
You kidding me?
This can't be happening.
This is Jamie from the Aquaside Company. Clear your water completely. Destroy weeds, algae, and the muck that's preventing you from enjoying your waterfront property. We know your time in the water is precious. We're the Aquaside Company. Call 800-328-9350 or visit aquaside.com. State permit may be required.